This is Strategies for Vibrant Health and Well-Being, hosted by Susan L. Miller. We bring you well-balanced information and resources on complementary and alternative medicine and on mind-body practices to empower you to be a part of your healing process.
Hi, everyone. This is Susan L. Miller, and this is Strategies for Vibrant Health and Well-Being. I'm so happy to welcome Mayan Greenbaum, PsyD, and I'm going to read a brief bio, so let me get started. Dr. Mayan Greenbaum is a wife and a mother of two precious children, ages 4.5 and almost three. She strongly believes that in order to raise emotionally resourceful and connected children, it's essential for parents to feel confident in their own love relationship and learn how to consistently get back to connection after conflict. She is especially passionate about helping families thrive during the early formative years when young children need so much, yet parents are typically exhausted and overburdened. Mayan is on a mission to inspire a movement where couples are empowered to heal the unconscious pain they inherited so they can enjoy and carry forward their birthright, the richness of living in a body that's fully alive, and the gift of genuine human contact in all its forms. Dr. Mayan Greenbaum is a New Jersey and New York licensed clinical psychologist. Her psychotherapy practice is in Livingston, New Jersey. She earned her doctorate from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology in 2004, where she became interested in relational body-oriented therapies. She completed postgraduate training in sex therapy at the University of Medicine and Dentistry in New Jersey in May 2005 and continues to pursue advanced training in couples therapy at the Center for Psychotherapy and Psychoanalysis of New Jersey. She is a member of the medical staff at St. Barnabas Medical Center in New Jersey. Welcome, Mayan.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Susan. It's a real treat to be here with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I'm so excited. As I was reading the bio, I thought to myself, oh, why hadn't I met her when I was still married and trying to navigate through the relationship and having children and raising a family? I think so many times that marriages can really be, I don't know if I want to use the word, but be saved by having the right skills and the right tools. And I know for myself, no one taught me that. I did not have them. So I want to ask, and I ask everybody who comes on to the podcast, like, what got you interested in the work that you're doing now? Because it is actually it's a bit different.
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly what got me interested. I think I've always had, since I was a little girl, just a real fascination with families and probably a sensitivity to how people interact with each other. And then through dance, I danced ballet for 13 years, and I really became very passionate about expression through movement and just being able to express myself without words. So I try to bring, help people really be in their bodies when we work together. And then my studies in Chicago, I was so fortunate to be mentored by some amazing psychologists who really just helped me understand the potential and the power of this work from some very rich traditions that I studied. And it just... I've found this work just immensely gratifying, and it's kept me energized and interested and curious.
What do you think, since you work, you work so closely with couples, what do you think is like the top one or two reasons that couples find themselves, especially, after having children, that they find themselves in this kind of like trouble zone where they're not connecting, not communicating? Because we know that if that goes on for too long, it's sometimes hard to come back. So what do you think are some of the reasons for this?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So timing is very important, and resentment can definitely, be cumulative and very powerful. What I really see is that I would say 80% of couples' conflicts and outbursts are really driven by their unconscious hurt and pain that usually happened long ago, whether it was in their own childhoods or in the context of their families of origin. Or sometimes it's even pain and trauma that gets unconsciously inherited, like you were saying in my bio, from previous generations that we take on because children are so sensitive. So I think that's really the biggest hidden source of conflict for couples. And once we have children, I don't know if you can relate to this, but I certainly felt like just so much gets stirred up for us when we're taking care of our children or trying to protect them or tuning into what they're feeling. And it can really bring back a lot of our own vulnerability and the things we experienced as children ourselves.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, having children it's an amazing experience, but you know, there's pain involved too, because, you know, we have to take a look, or we should be taking, or need to take a look at ourselves and, you know, a lot of our patterns and a lot of our stories, because we, you know, we kind of replay that. We replay the theme, we replay the story, the movie, whatever you want to call it, that we grew up with. So I think that it really is important. You know, you talk about essential skills that you help couples master. So can you talk a little bit about some of those skills? We talked about this earlier, you know, when we first met. I mean, and I want to tell the audience, you know, one of the things that attracted me so much to the work that you do, because it's so rooted in, you know, touch and in energy and creating that energetic field, you know, as a couple, and, you know, being, you know, into being a massage therapist, a body worker, a Reiki practitioner, you know, that I've always felt that was an important part of a relationship, but you kind of bring it all together.
Thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, what I've really been drawn to more recently, having, you know, become a mother myself, is teaching couples how they can be less afraid of what I call their power struggles, and which are inevitable, by the way, and how they can actually move beyond those power struggles and use conflict to deepen their connection with each other and to feel more secure with each other. And it really is an art. I find that it's an art to know how to turn back towards each other. And sometimes we have to do it multiple times and sort of recommit to turning back towards each other instead of, you know, I think for a lot of people, our reflex is to avoid or withhold or retaliate or just sort of plain give up and feel really hopeless and stop trying, you know. So I really try to teach couples how they can learn to make up quickly so they can move beyond those power struggles and then get to the good stuff that they're all yearning for, so they can stay together long enough to actually get some resolution and be able to enlist their creativity and their compassion for each other and find solutions that actually can be very deeply satisfying.
That's one of the things that, and not only did I have in the past, but I have to work on currently, is not holding the anger. Like, I get hurt and then I can't switch that off. It takes me a while to process it. That's just the way, you know, it takes me a while to process it and to let it go. I mean, what would you say to me, somebody like me?
Well, I can relate. I think most of our listeners probably can, and thanks for being honest about it. You know, anger can be just incredibly powerful, and it's such a visceral experience, and it's often so, it kind of hijacks us, right? Some of the people I've worked with have said that they feel like their anger hijacks them. So in spite of their best intentions and what they've promised themselves, they still find themselves, and I can so relate to this, getting really reactive and just becoming, you know, feeling hot in their body, feeling like, you know, their body movement, their motions, their movement changes. They can go into, we all go into fight or flight or freeze sometimes mode. And it really can take on a life or death kind of urgency. So what I really try to help couples do is to understand why it becomes so scary and what they're actually fighting for, And often there's a real vulnerability, which I find is very beautiful and really touching every single time when I witness this, that when we can get to what's underneath or what they're afraid of, it's usually something about that has to do with the, you know, their own rejection of themselves and just really getting scared that there is something either, you know, unlovable about themselves or really deeply shameful that they feel. And some people go into like pleading with their partners to accept them back or to feel like they're okay or that they're still loved. Where other people kind of like, you know, go into themselves more to try to protect themselves from being hurt further. So it can be really messy and it's not easy. It's not something we're born knowing how to do. So I just want to acknowledge that this is lifelong. It really is. And I see it as a daily practice, something we need to continuously come back to. And our relationships, you know, with our children and with our partners are probably the best opportunities we ever get to rework some of these old painful experiences and memories and to bring back parts of ourselves that we've rejected or that we've let you kind of sort of cut off from long ago, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Somebody once said to me, you know, in terms of relationship that, you know, the person you're in a relationship with, a romantic relationship, mirrors back to you, you know, parts of yourself that you, as you just said, that are kind of difficult to accept. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. Yeah. It is difficult to accept.
I know. And that's the therapeutic benefit of being in a relationship. Because I always think, you know, it's easier to just, you know, be alone, but then, you know, you don't get to see that, you know, you no one's mirroring it for you. So you think, oh, it's all right. I could keep doing what I'm doing and go on acting
so
the way
true.
I do.
And our unconscious wisdom really is, it's so intelligent because I find over and over again in the couples that I have the privilege of just sitting with moment by moment that our unconscious sort of has a secret plan for us. We're really drawn to the people who underneath really often struggle with the very same conflicts and dilemmas that we have, like around, you know, play versus responsibility or, it could be, you know, in many different dimensions, but they usually struggle with the exact same thing. And in their own family that they grew up in, they came up with their own solution that they needed to have in order to adapt to the way that they grew up. And they might have, you know, a solution or a way of being in the world that is so attractive and magnetic to us at first because it feels so different and so fresh and expansive, and it kind of opens us to opportunities and ways of being that we've shut off long ago. But it's those very same things, those very same qualities that when we're, you know, with them day in and day out actually become the most frustrating to deal with in our partners because it's the parts of ourselves we don't allow ourselves to be or feel. And, you know, I think what's also, what also takes a lot of people by surprise is that there can be tremendous and really painful disappointment that comes along with recognizing that our partners actually can't rescue us and they can't really save us. And their solutions are just as maybe incomplete or imperfect as our own. And so, you know, what I really try to help couples with is to see the wisdom and knowledge and to honor both ways of being in the world and to see what they can learn from each other.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, I think beautiful to look at your partner as, you know, this vehicle for you to grow and to accept those parts that you think that are ugly or you think are ugly, right? All those parts that we just, you know, we want to reject about ourselves. And I think if you love yourself, you have to love yourself, you know, the great parts and all of those ugly parts too, because that's what makes up the whole, right? It's not just those good parts. And I mean, how lovely is it to find somebody that loves that whole being, you know, in totality,
mm-hmm.
and all of those other parts to it, all those other sides, You talk about some of the skills that you talk about, because, you know, we've had several conversations, are creating sacred rituals, which when I read this, I say that phrase all the time, like creating sacred rituals. And I really love the idea of rituals. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So it can look differently for every couple. That's really, you know, there's nuance in it, and there's a lot of room for creativity. But basically, if we think about the times in our day that are most important, in both in childhood and also as adults, this doesn't go away when we grow up. It's usually, and maybe, you know, you can tell me what you think, but it's usually around transition time. So like, when we first wake up in the morning, before we go off and launch ourselves out, or are launched by our partners out to the world, to our work lives, to daycare, to wherever we're headed. And then also when we reunite, when we see each other again, when we first walk in the door, before we go to sleep, those are all really sacred times when we have the opportunity to both help ourselves and our partner and our children too feel safe and grounded and just feel like they're back home with us in our presence. And I find that, you know, days where I'm not sure if I have that, or I can't fully connect in the way that I'm hoping, I really, I feel very differently going into my day. And so when we can be more deliberate about those times and set, put all the other things aside and really, look at it as a daily practice to guide us, it can energize us and help us feel much more confident and creative in the rest of our lives too.
I think about all of the distractions we have, you know, the digital distractions that we have, and how those have, you know, in some way taken time away from, you know, connecting with another. Whether it's our friends, our children, but especially our partners, you know, I remembered, you know, being, you know, in one room and, you know, my ex being in another room, and this is how we ended the day, you know, and there's something about, you know, ending the day together, you know, just kind of connecting and ending the day together, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and it doesn't have to be, there doesn't need to be any interaction even, just being in each other's presence, right?
Yeah, I think being in each other's presence, and I think doing some kind of, you know, having some kind of touch, whether it's a hug, you know, a hug goodnight or a hug, you know, something that kind of connects you, and this will probably lead me into the next thing, is that connects you, your energy, you know, reunites that again after being apart all day, and sort of encapsulates you.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So this is a good segue, because I wanted to get to just the ways that many of us forget to use this language that's available to us that we were born with, which is touch. And it really is a full language, and it can express so many different states and emotions and feelings, not just good ones. But I feel like we often were so much in our heads that it's hard for us to remember that we have other ways of communicating or being together. And touch doesn't lie, right? I think even, especially in times where we're feeling really charged or trying to manage big feelings, big scary feelings that can overwhelm us, touch can be a very good way to bypass anxiety and anger or to just work through it, because we know, all of us have this intuitive knowing that it's the truth, right? It doesn't lie. And I love this quote from a psychologist who, he's actually a relational body psychotherapist, psychologist in Israel. And he talks about this a lot. He talks about resonance and touch. His name is Asaf Rolf Ben Shechel. And let me see if I can find his quote, because I wanted to share that with you.
You know, for me,
yeah.
For me, you know, doing some of the work that I do, I just am always amazed at the power of touch. And, you know, when I start to work with somebody and I start to, you know, touch them in the context of body work and massage, you know, how all of a sudden, and it's not even all of a sudden, I mean, just, you know, a little bit at a time, they start to relax and then they start to open up and they start to, you know, really feel their feelings. And it's really powerful. And I think that it is that space that so many people don't pay attention to, especially yes. couples therapists. I mean, look, I went to couples therapy and that was not a space that we were addressing at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can use it. We can really access it in so many different ways. It's very rich. So I found Dr. Wolfenschacher's quote, and he says in one of his interviews that I read recently, "I trust my fingers. My fingers are much better ears and eyes than what I hear and see." Oh. And I just want to sit with that for a moment because it's so powerful.
That is really powerful. I trust my fingers. They don't. And I couldn't agree more. You know, you trust what you feel, right? You can feel so much if you just tune in.
Yes. Yeah. And when you say tune in, if I can name what we're tuning into.
Absolutely.
I'd like to introduce the concept of resonance and the idea that we're constantly, you know, co-creating this shared energetic field as couples. So it's the place where it includes both of us, but it's bigger than us at the same time. And yet it impacts us. Continuously, so it's sort of if you want, you could think of it as a place that the us is alive in each of us, and where I like to think of it almost like that couples are have a connected bundle of nerves, and so when one of them is in an emotional state or an emotional state that feels very down or depressed or scared, the other person can usually feel it and is usually responding to it, even if they're not conscious of it. And it goes in the other direction as well. So really our responsibility to ourselves as couples is to always be tuned in, not just to our own body and the body and emotional states of the person we love, whether it's our partner or our child, but also to that shared magical space that gets created between us. And I'm just thinking of an example from the other night, if I could share it quickly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I was putting our kids to sleep, and now they're in the same bedroom together, which they love. And so my son, who's our son, who's 4.5, was on one side, and our daughter, who's almost 3, was on the other side. And I was holding both of their hands at the same time. And we were just talking about the dreams they thought they were going to have and what they wanted to imagine as they sort of lulled themselves to sleep, you know, with me there. And my son said, "But Mommy, you have to keep stroking my hair because dreams can only come when you're stroking my hair." And then my daughter said, and you know, Mommy, you need to tell us what your imagination is going to be dreaming about." And so I think, you know, that's just the pure wisdom and intuitive knowing that children have, that touch is really important, that it has the power to either soothe or frustrate us, right, to help us feel safe. Or it could feel dangerous too. And also that mutuality is so important. And as long as I wasn't really surrendering and kind of sinking into that shared field, that sleepy kind of surrendering place, they couldn't fall asleep. And they were inviting me to join them. And as soon as I did, they both fell asleep. And I could feel their, you know, their pulse and while I was holding their hands, and it just felt very beautiful and really soothing to me also.
I think so, it's, I'm fascinated with this. And I think in this culture, and you can obviously, you know, correct me because I've only pretty much lived in this culture, but, you might have a different idea about it. I think in this American culture, we're a little bit less touchy or a little bit touch phobic. I mean, I experience this, you know, I have people tell me, oh my God, I would never, I'm never going for a massage. I'm not going to let people touch me. But I just feel like, you know, even, you know, putting your arms around somebody, you know, male or female, even as a friend, to just kind of put your arm on their back and just kind of feel, you know, where they're at, that people are very reticent about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I even worked in a camp one year when I was in college, many years ago, actually. And I remember just being struck. One of the first things we were taught is, even though we lived in this cabin together with these girls, I was a camp counselor, for I think several weeks, maybe it was for the entire summer, we weren't allowed to hug them. And I was furious. Of course, I didn't listen to that stupid rule. But these were girls who were homesick. They were missing their mommies and daddies. And, you know, I think they were so concerned about, I don't know, being sued or something, or the touch being misinterpreted or something, that they were instructing their camp counselors, who were supposed to be there to keep their, you know, campers feeling safe at night, not to use touch. Which I just feel like, you know, it made me angry and sad at the same time. But I think you're right that we do get these messages that touch is really dangerous. And many of the men that I work with have internalized that, unfortunately, and they're afraid that, you know, if their partner is a woman, that she'll misinterpret their touch and their bids for connection as I don't know, being aggressive, at which there's room for that too, but that they'll be misinterpreted somehow as being bad.
Well, I think that we've confused. I think we have touch confused, and that every time we think of touch, you know, it has a sexual meaning instead of just as soothing, as loving, as caring, as nurturing, as communication. Like you read that quote before, right? Mm-hmm. We look at touch in only one way, and so of course we're all have our armor on. I know for myself that, you know, no matter what my emotions are, especially if I'm having a day where I feel irritable or overwhelmed, there's nothing, you know, I don't really want somebody to say something. I want somebody, you know, I love when somebody just gives me a hug, right? Or just puts the hand on my back, or just, you know, just to say like, hey, I'm in it with you. Mm-hmm. I'm connected. We're connected. I'm in it with you. I'm not looking for a solution. Right. So I think that couples, you know, they use their, if they, you know, communicate, they tend to use their words more than that touch.
Yes. Yes. And I also find that when couples come in, they often attribute their problems to communication problems, but they're not really including touch in that language. When they think of communication, they're only thinking, many of them are only thinking of the words they use and how they say things. They're really neglecting just this whole other dimension of what they are actually communicating to each other, and the unconscious part of it too, the part that they're not even aware of that's getting communicated in their bodies or through their bodies, that their partners are often accurately picking up on and responding to.
Oh, right, right. You know, I remember taking this training once, and it was, you know, you would practice, you would hold your partner's hands, and you would sit across from each other, and you would start to breathe together, and then you would put your hand on each other's heart, or, you know, heart center, and you would breathe like that, and then you would do gazing into the eyes, right? And, you know, at first I was like, this is kind of strange. But afterwards, it was really impactful, like holding somebody's gaze and breathing with them. What are your thoughts on that?
I love it. I love it. I wish we had more of that.
I know. I just, like, we should be teaching people how to do that.
Yes. Yeah. And also teaching people that they can speak through touch. Like, it's the whole range. It can really represent the full human experience. It can be nice. It can be transgressive. It can be naughty. It can be soothing. It can be, it can help us establish boundaries. It can, you know, it can do all of that. It's not, we don't have to be limited to it being on either extreme. There's a full, you know, and to become fluent at it is really a skill that we need to relearn, and many of us.
Absolutely.
Because of, you know, our own parents often, yeah, either comfort or discomfort with their own bodies and their own, you know, the ways that they were best able to help us when we were upset.
Mayan, as we wind down, this has been incredibly interesting, and there's so much more to talk about. But what would you like the listener, your audience, to take away from all of this, especially if they're having, you know, some struggles, like all couples do? There's no couple, there aren't any couples who don't. But what would you like them to take away?
Yeah, first, just what you said. So to really normalize this, and I can vividly remember becoming really reactive, especially when I was very sleep deprived. So just to honor whatever it is that they're feeling and know that it's valid. And then if there's just, you know, one thing that I really want people to hold on to from our conversation is that, and this works with our partners and with our children, it's to find ways to turn towards our partner rather than away from them, especially when we're hurt or upset. So it would be foolish of me to suggest that we can avoid conflict altogether. I really feel strongly that it serves a purpose in our lives, and it's inevitable. But it's what we do with it. It's how we can learn to hold on to ourselves and still move back towards our partner. And it's the way that we treat our partner and the people we love when we're upset that really has the most impact on our relationship as a whole. So if we're able to do that without blaming or, you know, attacking them or shaming them, we're actually much more likely to get the response that we're really longing for. And I still need to remind myself of this too. I'm human, and we all fall into that.
Of course.
Those states, it's more about recognizing them when we're in it and finding ways back to, you know, to the rest of ourselves and back to our partners.
Well, this is my feeling. I think every couple should be seeking and getting some kind of therapy, especially your kind of therapy. I really do. I think it's just part of maintenance. You know, it's part of maintenance, keeping it all together as, you know, things change and as families grow. I think it's, you know, people, they do maintenance on their cars, they do maintenance on their homes, but they forget the most important thing, the relationship. Because without that, none of that other stuff really, really matters. So I'm all for that. But tell us, tell the audience how they can reach you.
Yeah, so if you're listening right now and you feel called to deepen your connection with yourself first and foremost, and then with your partner, I've actually created a no-cost online training for our listeners to get more. And in it, I teach not only how you can help, you know, stop the fights with your partner in their tracks, but also how to move beyond fighting into the struggle-free zone that you and I, Susan, have been talking about here. If you go on there, you'll discover some simple tools to create instant connection, restore the flow of love between you, and also learn how to master the art of making up quickly so that you can save yourself those hours or sometimes even days of silent treatments and agony. And they can find that at www.syncyourhearts.com.
Well, I know I'm going to take advantage of that, and I suggest everybody else does too. And I like what you said. It's, you know, it's about right getting in touch with yourself first, and then with your partner. So I think that I'm definitely going to be looking at that. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast and giving us a lot to think about. I so appreciate it, Mayan.
I've really enjoyed it too. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and I hope that we've touched whoever is listening, even though we're not physically, you know, sharing the same space together right now.
That's right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Strategies for Vibrant Health and Well-Being. If you like this show, tell a friend and subscribe to us in iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. you can leave comments or questions on our Facebook page at facebook.com/strategies for vibrant health and well-being.